The Shir tonight is for Rosh Hashanah, and the title of the Shir tonight is Analysis and Tefillah. So tonight we're going to look at the Haftorah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which details and gives the story of Chana and Chana's Tefillah. So we're going to go through the Psukim and analyze it, and the main focus of the Shir tonight is going to be on understanding the nature of Tefillah's Chana and why it's successful. So we'll start through with the Psukim, source number one. I started at Pasuk Dalid, but I think it's important to start with Pasuk Aleph. So I'll just read it inside, the first couple of Psukim, and then we'll pick it up from Pasuk Dalid to get a little bit of background. So we're going to read through. It's an interesting story superficially. And then we're really going to analyze Tefillas Chana and gain some insight for Rosh Hashanah and the Asar Simei Tshuva. So if we look in Shmuel Aleph Aleph, it's the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. It says, "Vayhi ish echad min haramasayim tzofim mahar Ephraim, ushmo Elkanah ben Yerucham ben Elihu ben Tohu ben Suf Ephrasi." So there's a man named Elkanah, and he was an important man, and he was the son of all these people. "Velo shtei nashim, shem achas chana, v'shem hashenis pnina, vayhi lifnina yiladim, ulchana ein yiladim." He had two wives. One of them's name was Chana, and the other one's name was Pnina. Pnina had children, and Chana did not have children. "Ve'alah ha'ishahu me'iro miyamim yamima lishtachavos v'lizboach l'ashem tzvakos b'shilo v'sham shnei v'nei eli chofni u'finchas konim l'ashem." And he would go up to the mikdash very often to bring korbanos in Shiloh, and also there was Eli and his children Chofni and Pinchas. They were the Kohanim there. So just background before we get to Pasuk Dalet, there was a man named Elkanah. He was an important man. I think the Rashi says he was a Levi. And he had two wives. One of them was Chana, she had no children, and the other one was Pnina, and she had many children. Vayhi ayom, we're in Pasuk Dalet. Vayhi ayom, vayizbach Elkanah v'nasan lifnina ishto ulchol banel uvnose amanos. It was that day, is the day of a chag, and Elkanah brought korbanos, and he gave to Pnina, and also all of her children, which is one of her wives, gave them portions. Ulchana yitain mana achas apayim, ki es chana ahev, v'hashem sagar rachma. And he gave to Chana a greater portion, double a portion. Why? Because he loved Chana more, and also Hashem had shut off her womb. So if you look through the, just to summarize, at this point, Elkanah had these two wives, and it was he was in the mikdash, and it was one of the chagim. He brings korbanos, and he gives the meat to Pnina and her children, but he gives Chana a greater portion. Why? Because he loves her more, and also she has no children. Okay. The chiasata tsarasa gamkas bavur hari'ima kisagar Hashem bi'ad rachma. So what would happen was that her rival, Pnina, would provoke her again and again in order to anger her because Hashem had closed her womb. So what would happen was Pnina would taunt her, and we'll see in Rashi, after we go through the pshat of the psukim, we'll see in Rashi what she would say to her. But she would taunt her because she had no children, and she was jealous. V'chein ya'ase shana v'shana, midei aloso b'veis Hashem kein tachisena v'tivke v'losochal. And this would happen every year. Every year, it would be apparent to Chana that she didn't have children. Pnina would rub it in her face, and she would get so sad, she would cry, and she wouldn't eat anything. Vayomer la Elkanah isha chana lama sevki v'lama lo sechli v'lama yeirol v'avei chalo anochi tov lach me'asar abanim. Elkanah, he's trying to relate to her, and he's trying to get through to her. And he says to her, "Why are you crying? Why won't you eat? Why are you so sad? You're more important to me than 10 children." So he's trying to compensate for the fact that she doesn't have children and saying, "I love you. I love you so much." So what happens? Look in Tess. Vatakum chana acharei achla v'shilo v'acharei shaso v'eli akohen yoshev al kisei al mezuzah seicha Hashem. So Chana gets up after she eats, so she decided to eat, and after she drinks, and Eli is sitting there at the doorpost of the heichal of the mikdash. V'hi maras nefesh, she was very bitter. V'tzispalel al Hashem uvachosivke, she's very bitter, and she davens towards Hashem, and she cries a lot. She cries continuously. V'chosivke. And what does she say? Vatidur neder. She makes a neder, a vow, vatomar, and she says, Hashem tzvakos, imra'o sire ba'ani amasecha, uzchartani velo sishkaches amasecha, v'nasata la'amasucha zera anashim, unisativ la'Hashem kol yimei chayav, umoral lo yale al rosho. She says, Hashem tzvakos, Hashem, Lord of hosts. We're going to analyze that idea. If you see the affliction of your maidservant, and you remember me, and you don't forget, and also you give me children, male children, I'll give them to you all of their lives. Umara lo yala rosho. Either means a razor will not come upon their head, or fear of man won't come upon him. We'll see what that means as well. So what happens? She's frustrated every year. She's taunted by Penina, and finally she gets up. She goes to daven, and this is what she says. She's davening, she's crying, and she makes this neder, this vow, that if you give me a child, then I will dedicate this child to you. And while she's davening, Eli is holding his mouth, and he's watching her, and he's observing her mouth. She was davening to herself, and she was quiet, and Eli was looking at her lips moving, and he thought that she was drunk. Eli, who's the Kohen Gadol, he's trying to protect the Mikdash, he says, remove the wine from you, you can't daven drunk. He says, no, I'm not drunk, I was just pouring out my soul towards Hashem, I'm very bitter. Don't think that I'm unscrupulous, but because of my conversation and my anger, that's why I've been speaking this way. So Eli, he says to her, go off in peace, and that which you asked from Hashem will be granted to you. So what happens? She liked this. She went on her way. She ate, and she was no longer sad. Her sadness had gone away. So just to summarize the psukim from, I know I didn't have Pasuk Aleph, but the basic story is that Elkanah had two wives, Chana and Penina. Penina had children, Chana did not. And Penina would taunt Chana routinely. Chana would get angry and angry, very angry. Eventually, one of the Chagim in the Mikdash, she gets up, she's crying, she's distraught, and she davens. And in her tefillah, she makes a very specific tefillah, making a vow. And Eli thinks she's drunk, but she says no. Eli says, okay, your wish will be granted. And then she's not sad anymore. She's no longer sad. So we have to look at the tefillah of Chana. What was so special about the tefillah of Chana? And in the end, she did have a child that turns out to be Shmuel. That's the end of the story. We'll look at it at the end of the shir. But the question is, what was the nature of tefillah Chana? Why was it successful? You know, what's the purpose of the story in general? But the more specific question is the nature of this tefillah. Chana was successful in this tefillah. So why was this a successful tefillah? So if we look in number two in Rashi, we're going to get some background information to try to understand tefillah, tefillah Chana, and then we'll come to a beautiful idea in tefillah. So look at number two in Rashi. It says Tzara saw that was her rival Penina. So it's a reference to the fact that Penina would taunt her. Aisha's Baila Penina. So Rashi explains that's Penina. Gam Kas. So she would constantly taunt her and make her angry. Kas achar kas, tamid. There was a constant taunting. L'chach nemar gam kas. That's why it says also anger. Haisa omerisla. What would she say? Klum kanisa yom me'uferes levincha gadol o chalok levincha katan. She would say in front of her, have you bought a cloak for your older son? Or have you bought a cloak and clothing for your younger son? So she clearly would say in front of her and try to taunt her and make her aware of the fact that she didn't have any children. But look in the next Rashi. It says, Bavur hari'ima shetisonein. In order for her to complain, she wanted her to complain and to whine, you know, tisonein. Rabbosinu amru, Chazal say, Bavur hari'ima shetispalel l'shem shamayim neskavna. They say that really Penina, there was some part of her that really wanted Chana to daven. And she wanted to get her to daven, so she would constantly taunt her. And part of the taunting was to get her to daven and to get her to be angry. So we have to understand, and I think the shir will explain the motivation of Penina and how that helped. But it's a strange type, it's a strange idea that Penina, although she was taunting her, she really wanted to do it so that she would daven. Why would that be successful? What was Penina's plan? Even though I'm sure there was an aggression there, there was also a positive. So what's the positive? Let's analyze that further. But let's keep going in Rashi, and then, like I said, we'll get to a critical idea. So what happened? Ba'ad Rachma. Look at the next Rashi. We're in source number two. Keneged Rachma. V'chein kol lashon ba'ad. So it means that she was barren. It means opposite her womb. And that's what it says, ba'ad. V'chein yaseh Elkanah. So what would Elkanah do? He would give her shana b'shana. Nosin la chelek muvchar. He would give her the best portion, lahar osa, in order to show her shemechababa, that he loved her, vitzarasa lefi chiba shabayla marla, and because Elkanah showed her this love, what happened was Penina got jealous. Kain tarbe gamhi lachisa, and Penina would taunt Chana. So you have this vicious cycle that Elkanah is showing more love to Chana. Chana doesn't have children. Penina gets jealous. Penina taunts Chana, and Chana gets angry. But part of the reason why Penina taunts her is because she wants her to daven. She wants her to get to the point of anger where she davens. So, like I said, we're going to explain how that helped and what the motivation was over there. So Anochi Tov Lach, look in Ches, Mechababach. So he's trying to compensate Elkanah, and he's saying, I love you more than 10 children. Me'asarobanim, Shialdo Li Penina. So he's trying to say, I really love you. The fact that you don't have children has no effect on my love for you. In fact, I love you more than Penina and all of her children. So we have to understand the background. Why is the Navi giving us this background? And then what was the nature of the tefillah? Look at number three, the Malbim. He actually asks the questions better, but the same questions. Look at number three. The Malbim says, Hashelos, Madua lo kama ad hena lehispalel, rag ze'ata hapam arishon. So one question he says is, if this happened every year, did she not daven every year? So why is it that at this point, all of a sudden, she decided to daven? It sounds like this was the first time she davened for having children. So why is that the case? So we'll have to explain that. We'll have to answer that. So that's one question. The question is, why is this the first time? Is this the first time that Chana felt the need to daven, and why? V'lama achrei achla v'lo kodem ha'achila. And why did she daven after she ate? The whole purpose before him was saying she was so sad that she couldn't eat, and then it's saying she ate and then she davened. So his second question is, why did she eat why did she daven after eating? So it's another question. It's a good question, and we're going to explain the answer to that. So once again, so before we get into the actual tefillah, we have this whole background. We want to understand the background, the idea of the taunting of Penina, and also Elkanah trying to show her that I love you more. Why do they have to give us that information? And furthermore, we have more specific questions of the Malbim. You know, did she not daven before? Why did she daven after she ate? And then finally, which we'll get into, and it'll open up the whole area, what's the nature of her tefillah? What was so special about Chana's tefillah that she was successful this time? What critical idea can we learn from her tefillah? Okay? I'm sure there's other questions as well. If anybody has any, just stop me. We're going to do Yud Aleph. So it's the actual tefillah. It says, Vatidor neder vatomer Hashem tzvakos. She makes a vow and she says, Hashem tzvakos, Lord of the hosts. So look at number 14. Number 4. So Rashi explains, Hashem tzvakos. Lama nisyachid shem zeh kan. So why did Chana use this name here? This is one of the names of God, Tzvakos. So why did Chana use this name over here? Amra lefanov, Ribono shel Olam. She said before Hashem, Shnei Tzvakos barasa ba'olamecha. You created two realms, two dimensions. Ha'elyonim, that which is up above. Lo parim below rabim, velo mesim. The heavens, they don't have children, they don't procreate, and they don't die. They live forever. Vatachdonim, and those in the underworld, you know, in this world, in the physical world, parim barabim, their nature is to procreate, umesim, and they die. Gam imani minatachdonim, if I'm of the lower world, ayat prayer ve, then I should have children, I should be able to procreate, umesa, and then die. Vimani minhalyonim, but if I'm above, of the heavens, lo amus, then I shouldn't die. So this is a strange idea in Rashi, and this is the jumping point. But basically, Rashi is saying that the nature of her tefillah, she uses the shame of Tzvakos. Why? Because she's referencing Tzva Hashemayim, that God is the Lord of hosts, of the different realms of the universe. And she's saying that the difference between the physical world and the non-physical world, the heavens, is that in the physical world, people procreate, there's procreation and death. But in the non-physical world, there isn't. So she's saying, if I'm of the physical world, then I should have children, and I should be able to procreate, and if not, and die, and then if not, I should live forever. So what's the nature of this argument? It's a very bizarre argument. Does she really believe that she's of the heavens? Does she really believe that she's not going to die? So why is her argument such a strong argument? What is the idea behind her argument? Okay, and furthermore, we're going to skip the next part of Rashi, because we'll come to it in the next part of the shir. She keeps going. Look at number 4. It says, Imra otireh, Rabbusina darshu bo, b'maseches brachos, mashu darshu, fine. Amasecha. She says, Amasecha. three times. Ha'amar gimel pa'amim. It says three times amasecha b'mikra k'neged shlosha dvarim sha'isha mitzuva alayim. It's relative to the three things that women are obligated in. Chala, nida, and neros. So she's mentioning the fact that she's keeping the mitzvos, which is also interesting. Why does she mention that in her tefillah? There's a reference to that. And then she asks, Zera anashim tzadikim, kemada at omer b'shnei anashim tzadikim, anashim chashuvim, kemada at omer anashim chacham yiduim. She's asking for men who are righteous. That's what she wants of her, that she procreates. Unisativ lashem, she roi lisito lashem. He should be appropriate to give to God, umora, targum yonasan, umaros enash lote aloi, and he will not fear a man. So it's furthermore, part of her tefillah is she's referencing this idea, am I of the lower world or am I of the heavens? So what does that mean? And then she makes this weird vow where she says that if she has children, the child or the child that she's requesting is a child that's ra'i, he's appropriate to be given towards Hashem, and that no man, he should be feared by, or he should have no fear of man. So what's the nature of this tefillah? It's a very strange tefillah. If a person wants children, should they go to God and say, A, that I'm going to live forever? Am I of the lower world or the higher world? And B, why is it necessary, or why is part of her tefillah the idea that she's willing to give up of the child, or that the child should be ra'i to be given to Hashem? Why is that part of her request? It's a very strange type of tefillah. So before we answer, and I want everybody to think about it on the phone line. What's the nature of her tefillah, and why is she referencing this strange Rashi, which says, am I of the lower world or the upper world? Am I going to live forever, or am I going to procreate and die? And therefore, if I'm of the lower world, I should be able to have children. And then why is she even mentioning the idea of making a neder and giving this child to Hashem, or making the child appropriate to be given to Hashem? Why is that part of her tefillah? So, to try to answer it, I just want to show the emotional state, and then we'll come back to what the idea is. So if you look at number 5, in the Metzudas David, on Shmuel Aleph, Perak Aleph, Pasuk Yud, it says, Vihi maras nefesh, that she was very bitter. So, bevoal de hispalel, haya nafsha marla bima'od. So what happened? When she went into tefillah, she was very bitter. She started out very bitter, ba'ani b'masha ani ma'una b'tsar v'tugyon, and she was very anguished. And she says in the tefillah, or part of her tefillah is a reference to her anguish. And then in number 6, so she goes into the tefillah and she's very bitter. And in fact, the beginning says, v'tispalela shemu b'chosiv kesh, she was crying continuously. And then it says, what'd she do? V'eshpoch es nafshi. She poured out her soul, number 6, and says, Targum Yonasan va'amaris uba nafshi. She expressed the shame of her soul, the deepest anguish of her soul, bitzlo, through tefillah. V'chein yishpoch sicho. And that's what it means to pour out your conversation. So that's what happened. That's how she describes it. Va'yishpoch es nafshi. She says to Eli, that's why she was acting this way. She was pouring out her soul. So in the beginning, she comes in bitter, then she pours out her soul. And then at the end, and in fact, there's a reference to that, Tefillah la'ani kiyato flifnei Hashem yishboch sicho. If you look at number 7, Mitzudas Tzion over there in Tehillim, he says sicho inyan sipor hatlos kimo asicha b'mar nafshi. It's like a conversation. It's reflecting on all the things that bother you. And then at the end, she no longer has any sadness, any sorrow. And the Radak even says after the tefillah, when Eli says to her, your wish is going to be granted, afterwards it says that she no longer had any sorrow, and in fact she ate and she was fine. And the Radak points out, look at number 8, Ladarka, Halchala Labesa, V'achla, Nirashlo Achla in Baila, O Afsharki Achla Ma'at Behefzer Baila. So beforehand she wouldn't eat with her husband, or she would only eat with her husband if he coerced her. The Achshav, after this tefillah experience, and Eli said to her that she would be given a child, Hetivas Liba V'achla, she was happier and she ate. Uvidrash mahul didarka. What does it mean in the drasha? Shapirsa nida kimo kiderach nashimli. That means that she got her period and that she was menstruating. So it's a funny thing that she's happy afterwards, despite the fact that she was menstruating, which would imply that she couldn't have children. So the pshat is that really she was happy because she trusted in Eli, in Eli's nevuah. But if you want to learn, and I think there's insight into this tefillah, what do you see here? If you don't hold like that, if you don't read the pshat, but you just go based on the psukim alone, it seems like beforehand she's bitter, she goes through the experience of tefillah, and then afterwards she's happier and she's more satisfied. So this, to me, seems like a preliminary, from a preliminary standpoint and initial analysis, it seems to be similar to a therapy or a therapeutic experience, because she's starting off very bitter. She's starting off sad. She's crying. And then she pours her soul out, and then she's happier after the fact. So what exactly is going on in the tefillah? What's so special about tefillah's chana? So let's go back to the svakos idea in Rashi. So if we go back to number four. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Was she happy like after her tefillah or after she spoke with Eli, or does it matter?
Well, the Rishonim do say it was after she spoke with Eli. So one idea you could say is that it's because she was confident that she was going to have a child. That's one possibility, and I'm not going to discount that possibility. But another possibility, it's not, I mean, you'll see from the analysis that it's not necessary, but another possibility is that the tefillah alone made her happier. It gave her a certain feeling of happiness. So that's, I mean, I don't know if the Mefarshim, I didn't see the Mefarshim say this outright, but most of them say it's because of the trust in Eli that she would have a child. But if you learn, and you'll see, we'll analyze it, there's definitely an idea of the actual experience of tefillah making her feel happier. So you'll see what I mean, and I'll explain it. So beforehand, let's look at the background information. So beforehand, you have this whole back and forth between Penina, Elkanah. It's a vicious cycle. Penina is jealous because Elkanah loves Chana. Chana is jealous of Penina because Penina has children, and it's a never-ending cycle. So the Malbim asked originally, why didn't she ever daven before this point? And we also asked, what was Penina's intention? So the thing is, you see before the tefillah that there's a lot of emotions involved in Chana's desire to have children. She's getting very angry. And there's a very strong emotion to have children of competition, of love, of feeling love from your husband. So a lot of those emotions are being stressed early, initially. And that's what's going on before. And that's why the Navi explains this and gives this information that really beforehand, a lot of the drive for Chana's need or desire to have children was tied to this idea of feeling self-worth, feeling like she was loved. And as much as Elkanah picked up on that, it wasn't satisfactory to her. So initially, a lot of those emotions, the emotions of competition with Penina, the emotions of feeling loved and feeling self-worth, were tied into the idea of having children. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's very normal and natural to feel that way. But that's not really the essential need or the essential drive to have children. It should not be based on that. It should not be based on the desire to feel loved. It should not be based on competition. That's really secondary, but there should be a more basic need, a more basic drive. And I was thinking of an example, you know, like a car, for example. You know, you need a car to travel, and that's the basic need. The basic need of a car is to travel from one place to another. If you need to go to work, you need to get from one place to another. It's an easier way. But then there's a lot of other emotions that get caught up in the car, that you want a car that's similar to your friends or better than your friends, jealousy, competition. You know, my parents like this car. They like, they'll respect me more. All these emotions start getting mixed in with the basic need. And there's nothing wrong with those emotions, but the basic need gets covered over by all these externals. And before Chana was mispalel, all these externals were bothering her. All these other reasons to have children affected her, and they were part of her drive. And her desire to have children was caught up in this need for competition and love. In fact, the idea that she's upset and that she's crying and she keeps getting angry shows you that this affected her, and that she was bothered by that. And that part of her drive to have children and to have a child was tied to the need for self-worth, the need for love, competition with Penina. All those things existed beforehand. So what happens? She goes into tefillah. So the question was, why didn't she daven before, the Malbim asked? So I think there's an answer to that. The answer is that she did daven before, but the thing is, in order for her tefillah to be successful, her tefillah had to be, she had to sift through all those superficial needs and emotions and desires, and she had to get to the basic drive and the basic need to have children. And only if she got there, and only if she could be one with that basic need and that basic drive, would her tefillah be successful. Because she was asking from the standpoint of, you know, the most basic and simple, request. And I'll explain what that means. So why didn't she ask before? That's the Malbim's question. She did ask before. But until this point, she wasn't able to be mispalel and sift through all those emotions, all those, that need for competition, that need for self-love. But what happens? So Penina, she pushes her to the point where she has to confront all these emotions. She has to express all the emotions, and she has to confront. She's at the breaking point. And once you're at the breaking point, it's like the rock bottom. Once you're at the rock bottom, then you really have to get through everything. You have to analyze. You have to go through all your emotions and get to the root base need of the thing and analyze it from that point. So the idea of number two in Rashi is that Penina, on the one hand, there was aggression there, but Penina also recognized that in order for Chana and her tefillah to be successful, she would have to get to that breaking point. She would have to get to the point of Kas where she can no longer tolerate it, and she would have to analyze her emotions and sift through them and decide which emotions were relevant, which emotions were superficial, and which are more basic. So what happens? Look in number one, and if you look in number in Pasuk Vav, sorry, Pasuk Yud, it says, Vihi maras nefesh vatisbalel al-Hashem v'chosivka. So she goes in very bitter, and she's crying continuously. And what happens is that she makes this neder. So initially she's crying, and it says, Vayishpoch esicho, that she's like conversing. It's as if she's opening herself. She's pouring out her soul. So what happens is that she allows herself to go through this experience. This all of her anger is dissipated because she's able to complain and she's able to get through all those superficial emotions to get to the root emotion, the root need that she has to have a child. And that's when you get to the actual tefillah itself. The tefillah itself is the neder, and she says, Hashem Tzvakos, in number four. So what she's saying, Laminis Yached Shem Zekan, why? Because she's saying, if I'm of the lower world, then I should have children and die. If I'm of the higher world, I should live forever. So the basic need to have children, the maternal instinct, is tied to the fact that the world needs to continue on. And if people don't have children, if they don't have children, then the world will, or at least humanity, will cease to exist. So that's the most basic need of having children. It's not tied to self-worth. It's not tied to love. Yes, those come with having children. When you have children, you get a lot of nachas. You get a lot of pride out of your children. You get a lot of vicarious living through your children. You feel, greater love from your husband. All those things occur, oftentimes. But that's not really the root drive. The root desire to have children is the basic desire to continue the world, so that the world can continue on. And the need to have children was built into the human nature, because if man didn't have that need, then the world would just cease to exist. At least humanity would cease to exist. And that's the fundamental difference between human beings and the heaven, the heavenly bodies. That in the human, in the lower world, the need for procreation is it's a need that's built into humanity, and it's necessary for the world to continue on. So what's happening? So Chana, she's finally getting to the root drive of having children. She's able to sift through all those superficial emotions of, I need love, I need competition with Penina, and her tefillah is an expression of the fact that she finally gets to her need, that she's able to express it, that my need to have children is the fundamental maternal instinct. It's really the need to contribute to the world. I have a need to contribute to the world, to make sure and ensure that the world will continue. And I have that, and that's built into me. And she's recognizing that. So now she's asking, her tefillah was elevated now. See, beforehand, she was asking, it's like a person asking for something, but they're not really asking from the most basic need, from the most basic standpoint. They tie in all these superficials. I need a car because I need, because I need to beat out my friend and have a better car than my friend. And I need to show my superiority. No, those are not true needs. The underlying need that she's expressing is a more basic. It's more primitive. It's built into man. And what's the whole process of tefillah of Chana is that the process is therapeutic. It's like analysis. That's why I titled this year Analysis and Tefillah, because the tefillah is an analysis of sorts. That if a person is honest, they can be yishpocha sicho. They can go into tefillah and express their concerns and their needs. But eventually you have to get to that, you can get through all those superficial drives and desires and get to that main emotion, that main instinct that drives you. And that's what Chana is able to do. She's able to sift it down and wilt it down all the way to that main idea, which is that I'm a human being and my drive to have children is simply the maternal instinct, the drive, the human drive to continue the world, for the world to continue to persist. And with that idea, you understand why she made the vow as well, because the vow is an expression of that. The idea that she's willing to give up of her children to God, and the child should be roi for God, is also an idea that it's not about the personal. She's not having children because she needs the child to say, "Mommy, I love you." She's having children because she wants the child to be, she wants the world to continue with humanity, and she wants to contribute to humanity. And that's why for Chana, she's even willing to give up of the child, and she wants the child to be roi, to be given up towards God, and mora loyal rosha, to be on a certain level where they can affect the world. So Chana was, through the process of tefillah, she was able to be shofech her soul. Eshbuch es nafshi. She was able to pour out her soul. The process began with her going in bitter and angry, and then she goes through this cathartic, therapeutic experience where she's able to whittle down all those superficial emotions and get down to the basic need. And then she asks, her tefillah asks from that standpoint, from the basic standpoint of, I want to contribute to the world. And the vow, the neder, is an expression of that. The fact that she's willing to give up of the child shows you and demonstrates that it's not about the need for love. It's not about the need for a competition. It's more about the desire, the basic human need and desire to contribute to the world and allow the world to go on and persist. So that is the fundamental idea in tefillah that she's expressing. Well, the fundamental idea that Chana is expressing is that tefillah, the idea of tefillah is that a person should be conversing with Hashem in their tefillah, but they should be feel comfortable to express their needs and ultimately get and dig deep and get to that basic need. And try to sift through all the superficial drives and all those emotions and get to the most basic need. And then when you ask from that standpoint, it's a different type of tefillah. It's a much greater, stronger tefillah. And the emotions that she feels beforehand in number 5, 6, and 7, and 8, the emotions she feels beforehand and the emotions she feels afterwards, I don't think is just tied to the idea that she was guaranteed a child, but it's also tied to the experience of tefillah alone. If you relate to tefillah properly, you should feel a certain satisfaction after that you've, similar to a therapeutic experience when you're, you know, when you're in analysis or you're, you know, you're going through that therapeutic experience, afterwards, you feel a certain happiness and a certain, you don't feel as sad. Why? Because you're able to discuss your feelings and whittle them down to the most basic problem and most basic issue. So that's what tefillah does. Tefillah gives a person an opportunity to do that. And in fact, that's one of the main benefits of tefillah. Okay, any questions? Does that make sense?
Yeah? Taunting, was that... calculated to bring the child, or just generally to push her.
Right. So I think that Rashi says both. On the one hand, Penina was also jealous and she wanted the love of Elkanah, but on the other hand, she recognized that the only way Chana's tefillah would be successful was to push her to that point. So there was a good there. There must have been some recognition on the part of Penina that Chana had to be able to be pushed to the point of no return, to the point of anger where she would have to deal with it and she would have to analyze herself and her own anger and get to that root issue, or at least be able to deal with it and remove those issues. So I think that's what it's saying. I think that's what Rashi means and the Chazal. They say that on the one hand, Penina was aggressive towards Chana, but on the other hand, she recognized that the method in which, so she was also very intelligent. She recognized that the only method where Chana would be successful in davening and actually getting a child would be if Chana was at the point of no return. If she could get to that point and then force herself to analyze it and analyze her anger, then only then could she ask for a child from the proper standpoint and she would be granted a child. So Penina was aware of that, and Chana, and that's what answers the Malbim too, because it's not, and why did she go after she ate? Because that was also part, that's also part of being in a certain state of tefillah. She wanted to be in a certain state of mind where she could be able to be shofech sicho. If a person's hungry or they're not, then it's much more difficult. But I guess the idea is, I mean, it's not such a clear point on the eating part. I don't think it's such a strong question. I like the first question better. But the idea is that she was in a certain state of mind where she was able to open up. And through opening up, in fact, she drank a little bit. So through opening up, she was able to finally ask from the proper perspective, the proper standpoint. But it was a cathartic experience, a therapeutic experience for her. And that's one of the benefits of tefillah, that when a person davens and they feel a certain need and they express it in their davening, afterwards, if you express it properly, the chances of your tefillah being accepted are much higher if you can sift through those superficial emotions, and B, you feel better afterwards. There's a certain satisfaction that you feel afterwards. Okay, if you look at number 9, just one more point here in the shir. So if you look at number 9, the Gemara says a little bit different than Rashi, and Rashi quotes the Gemara, and the Gemara gives a little bit of a different approach to the tefillah of Chana. I don't know if it's different. Let's look at number 9. So the Gemara is brachos daf lamin alfam and beis, and the Gemara says like this: Tidur neder avatomar Hashem tzfakos. So it's going on the same point that Rashi made on Hashem tzfakos. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar said, Miyom shibara Hakadosh Baruch Hu es olamo. From the point where Hashem created the world, lo haya adam shekaru la Kadosh Baruch Hu tzvakos. No man called Hashem tzvakos. Nobody used the term tzvakos. It was in the Torah, but no man would ever use it in tefillah until Chana. Ad shebasa Chana, only Chana was the first individual to use the term tzvakos, the karaso tzvakos, and she calls Hashem tzvakos. So why? Amra Chana lifnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chana says before Hashem, Ribono shel Olam, Hashem, mikol tzvai tzvaos shebarasa ba'olamecha, of all the hosts that you've created, and the stars and the heavens that you've created in your world, kasha be'inecha shetitein li ben echad, is it so hard for you to give me one child? Mashal lemaha davar doma, what's the parable? Lemelech basar v'dam, it's like a human king, she'asa su'uda la'avadav, who made a feast. Ba'ani echad v'amar al pesach. So a poor man, he comes to the king's palace, he's standing at the door, amar lahem, he says to them, t'nuli prusachas, give me one, you know, one piece of bread. V'lo hishgichu alav, they don't pay attention, they don't give him. Dachak v'nichnas etzalamach, the ani pushes himself in, and he goes to the king, amar lo, Adoni Amelech, my master, the king, Mikol Seuda Sha'asisa, from the big Seuda that he made, the big feast that he made, Kasha Be'inecha, Litein Li Prusa Achas, is it so hard for you to give me one thing, to give me a portion? So the Gemara is saying differently. The Gemara is saying that Chana had a different approach. It wasn't, he's not saying that it's an idea in Tzvakos of getting to the root cause and the root emotion, the root need of man. But he's saying a philosophical idea, that Chana was the first one to use tzvakos. So the question is, why was she the first one to use tzvakos? What's so novel about the idea of Chana, of using tzvakos? What's so special about using tzvakos, and why is it so unique that she used the term tzvakos, Lord of Hosts, Lord of the Heavens? Let's just go on a little bit in the Gemara, because there's another question, and then we'll put it together. The Gemara says, Imra Otira, if you see, Amar Rabbi Elazar, it's another explanation of the Pasuk. Amra Chana, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chana said before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Imra Mutav, if you see good, if you see my pain, Vim Lav Tira, and if not see it, Elav Estatar Bifnei Elkanah Bali. But what will happen? I'll end up going with another man in front of my husband. V'chevon demistatarna mashguli meisota. I'll put myself in a situation where I'll be alone with another man in front of Elkanah, and then they'll have to give me the meisota. V'yata usa toraschal plastar. Your Torah is not a lie. Shenemar v'nixav v'nizra azar. Because the Torah says that if a woman drinks the meisota and she's still alive and she survives it, that she's granted a child. That there's some type of reward there. So there's two parts to the tefillah. One is that she's calling Hashem tzvakos, and she's saying, is it so hard for you to give me a child? And then she's saying, and if you don't see my pain and my affliction, I'm going to put myself in a situation where I drink the meisota. And if I drink the meisota, even though, and I haven't been alone and intimate with the other man, I should get a child. That's one of the hashgachas. And is your Torah a lie? So what exactly is going on here? What is the uniqueness of the tefillah of Chana according to the Gemara? Why is she using the term tzvakos and this idea of the meisota? So it sounds like the Gemara is saying a little bit different than Rashi. See, the Gemara is saying that Chana used a new approach. Normally, when a person asks Hashem for and requests something, they request God's kindness, or they want rachamim, mercy. Can you give me this thing because of kindness? Can you give me this thing out of rachamim, out of mercy? And that's really a person trying to access schar v'onesh, reward and punishment. And even if I don't deserve it, can you just be merachim upon me? Can you do chesed? So you're trying to access the thing through God's kindness, through that type of hashgacha. But Chana, she was so desperate, and she was so her need for a child was so strong that she was taking a different approach. She wasn't taking the approach that I should be granted this child because I deserve it, or out of rachamim, but she was saying something else. She was saying, if you don't give me this child, then it'll look bad upon you. It'll reflect poorly upon you. If, same thing with the meisota, if I drink the meisota, are you saying that your Torah is a lie? She's trying to place God, she's trying to place Hashem in a situation where if he doesn't do it, then it'll reflect poorly upon him. So it's a different approach to tefillah. Chana introduced a new approach to tefillah. It's not that, obviously a person has to be careful with this approach, but Chana's approach was one of such desperation that she was at the point where she's not even asking for rachamim anymore. She's almost putting Hashem in a situation where she's saying, I need this so badly that if this isn't given to me, it reflects, it would reflect poorly upon you. It reflects that you can't do it, or that you have no care for me. You have no care for the Ani. It's like the Ani case, where the Ani goes to the Melech, and the Melech doesn't give him a prusa, even though he has a full feast in front of him. It reflects poorly on the Melech, that the Melech doesn't care, or he can't give a little bit to the Ani. So the idea is that Chana, she's approaching tefillah in a different way. She's approaching tefillah not out of a sense of deserving it, or not out of even requesting rachamim, but she's going the opposite direction. Svakos is the idea that if you don't give it to me, if this wish isn't granted to me, then it reflects poorly upon you. And it's the same thing with the Meisota. She's saying, if I drink the Meisota, is your Torah a lie? She's trying to push the issue. She's trying to make it that the situation, she's trying to force it to happen. And I think the reason why her tefillah was successful is that she was in such a desperate state that she was able to express the tefillah in an appropriate way. It wasn't chutzpah. It could be interpreted as chutzpah. It wasn't chutzpah. But it was an expression of desperation. She's in such a desperate state and a need for a child that she's even able to place her tefillah in a in such a way that it puts God in a, not that God's forced to do anything, but she's saying that if this doesn't happen, then it almost reflects poorly upon you. So she's using a different tactic of tefillah. And it's a tactic, that's why it says nobody ever used tzvakos, because it's saying that Chana was the first person, the first individual to create a tefillah using this type of tactic, using the tactic, and it's a tefillah of desperation. It's a tefillah where the need is so strong that there's no other way. But
what about Moshe's tefillah to save all these children?
I was thinking about that. That's a good question. I was actually thinking about that. But you see, even over there, he does use the midas harachamim. They say like Hashem, Hashem kel rachum. That even though you're right, on the one hand, it's a similar type of point that they're trying to demonstrate that if God doesn't do something, it'll look poorly or it'll reflect poorly upon him. But he also does say there is a request for rachamim. Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum is taught to Moshe in that instance. So it's a combination of those two. Over here, it sounds like she was just relying on tzvakos. She wasn't really going into the realm of rachamim, of chesed. It's a different idea. So, but it's a good question. I was thinking about that as well. Okay, excellent.
Talking about, would the
Rebbe
agree that she also analyzed her emotions and then got to the more basic needs of the maternal instinct, or no, that this approach doesn't necessarily have to say that?
Right, I was thinking that this approach doesn't have to say that. I think this approach is just saying that she, the Eshbel Hasicho is a different idea. It's not an idea of analysis. It's more of an idea that she was able to express the level of her need and desperation properly. Meaning, she's like an ani, and like this is what she needs to live, and you're the king, and you can't do this for me. Meaning, she was in such a desperate state, and her need was so strong, and that she was able to formulate it properly in order to and her request properly. So I think it's a little bit different. See, Rashi's saying, Rashi's approach is more of an analysis that she had to get to the underlying need. Yeah, definitely. But this is also an idea in tefillah. It's an idea that a person, when they're in a certain state of need and desire, that they should be able to express it fully to God. Like, you shouldn't hold back. That if you feel a certain way, and you're so, like, her desire for a child and her need for a child seemed to be so strong that her tefillah expressed that perfectly and properly. So that's also an idea, or a chiddush in tefillah, that a person, even if you don't sift through all your emotions, if the pain that you're going through is so strong and to express that desperation properly and to get to the point where you feel that desperation and you recognize that God's the only one who could help you in this situation, that's also an idea in tefillah, a great idea in tefillah. So those are the two different approaches. The Rashi's approaching it that it was analysis, it was almost like therapeutic, and the Gemara is saying it wasn't necessarily an analysis, but she was able to express the desperation that she was feeling properly. And because she was able to express it properly, she was also able to approach God in a certain way, in a unique way, and that's why she was granted the child, this child. So I think that's really the Gemara's approach, a little bit different. So tonight, that's really the end of the shiur. The last part of the shiur is just showing you from the name of Shmuel that she was that she was really her, you know, from her standpoint, she was, her desire was so strong that she was either, that's the other idea in the Gemara. Her desire was so strong to just have a child that it, that she was even willing to give up of the child. So it was almost a demonstration of how, also part of how desperate she was and how strong her desire was, that it wasn't, it was so strong that she was even willing to do something painful and give up the child to the point that that was how desperate she is. Because it's very difficult from a natural standpoint, a mother's standpoint, to give up the child. But the fact that she was willing to do so in her tefillah is showing the level of desperation, that her need for a child is so strong that she's even willing to give up of the child toward to God, to Hashem. And the name of Shmuel is a reflection of that, because it says, I think it says, Husha'ul Hashem, that he's borrowed, that she recognized that it's not hers. It's really, either it's the idea of a contribution to the world, and it's not really for her personal benefit or personal gain, or the idea that she's willing to almost give up of the child because her need is so great and so strong just to have children and to, and you know, to have the child. So that's the shiur tonight. So let me just summarize quickly. So the shiur tonight, just, we were just looking at Chana's tefillah and trying to look at it on a deeper level and try to gain insight into the tefillah. And what we saw was, through Rashi's approach, that she went through a therapeutic experience in tefillah. She started off angry, and the background of the story is telling you that there was a lot of competition and self-worth and love that was tied into the emotion and the drive to have children. And then through the tefillah experience and in her formulation of the tefillah, you see that she was able to whittle it down to the most basic need. And that's one approach, that's Rashi. And it's showing you that tefillah does that. It allows a person that therapeutic platform to get through their emotions and ask God from the right perspective. And then you have the Gemara, which sounds like, the Gemara sounds like it's a different approach. It's saying that she was using a novel approach to, in tefillah, and she was expressing her desperation of having a child, and the fact that she calls Hashem Tzvakos instead of asking for mercy or chesed shows you like the level of desperation that she was in. She's almost pushing the issue and creating a situation where if God doesn't do this, it looks poorly upon him. So that was really the, that's really also a chiddush in tefillah, that a person has to get and express the real frustration and the real level of desperation that they're feeling in the davening, and only then will your tefillah be answered and be responded to. Okay, so that's really the shiur tonight. So hopefully everybody has a ksiva chasima tova, and maybe there'll be a shiur next week, earlier in the week, maybe not, I'm not sure yet. So everybody, I want to wish everybody a ksiva chasima tova if there's no shiur. Okay?